This is a continuation from a lesson that I brought this morning in the Sunday School Hour. And I brought many, many scriptures this morning. There won't be so many in this after session. But we're talking about a subject that is vital to the understanding of the world. And I think that Christians need to understand things too, and not just non-Christians. I think we ought to have a right understanding of things. Otherwise, you can't write letters properly to your congressman. You can't make the right actions. You don't know how to think. You're contributing to the world's wrong thinking by your actions. If you don't, there's so many ministers today that are saying things that are contributing to the problem because they're not aware of the real situation, don't really know how to think properly on the subject. And I don't feel that it's wrong to take some time in a church service to teach the people how to think and what's right in relationship to the nation and the wars that are happening throughout the world. Now, there's only one moral and right way to fight a war. There is a moral way to fight a war. If you have to fight a war, there is a way that is the right way to fight it. And the priorities are, number one, you limit the casualties of innocent lives as much as possible. Those that are innocent, those that are attacked, limit the number that are killed and maimed as much as possible. Number two, now first of all, that's the first priority, is to limit it not only in this war, but in all possible future wars. In other words, make your actions such that they will make as few innocent people killed and maimed possible from now to the end of time. And then second priority is to do the same thing within this particular war. This war must not be the final goal. It must be the total history of mankind up ahead of us. Rather, not the history, but the total view of mankind up ahead of us. Number three, we should limit the loss of money and property of the innocent as much as possible. And number four, we should limit the number of deaths and sufferings of those in the guilty nations. Because the majority of people in the guilty nation are not guilty. And fifthly, we should shorten the war, and this is part of the whole, but shorten the war as much as possible. Human war rules must allow this to be the best for the world, must allow this in order to be best for the world. And whenever people make rules in war that violate this concept, although the rules may seem like moral, they are not. They are, in fact, not the most moral approach. And so some sweetheart approach to war. See, war is a nasty thing. It's a nasty thing. And there are some ridiculous rules made during wartime. If an aviator is in his plane, shoot him down. But if he's parachuting and you shoot him down, See, this is so ridiculous. The only point isn't whether he's sitting in a chariot that can fight back. This isn't one of these out in the arena kind of games. This is war. And if the enemy has attacking you and is trying to destroy you, if you let an airman float to earth and be shipped back to get in another plane and come, he's going to do more destruction throughout your country, and one airman can cause fantastic destruction. And to let all those hundreds of lives be lost and jeopardize the war, just because you hate to shoot a man when he's falling, but you should also hate to shoot him when he's riding. See, so there's a lot of stupid rules made during wartime that really make no sense. You need to do, it's a dirty business, you need to get it over with a few people killed as possible, particularly the innocent ones. Now, with that in mind, that should govern our thinking. Any military commander that will allow thousands of people to die to save one man is not worthy of his rank. In fact, he should be judged guilty of treason. There's a lot of fuzzy thinking being brought by the liberals. Now, what, in my judgment, the United States should have done in World War II. See, we knew that the communists were a major threat. And our FBI had the names of the communists, and we were exceedingly worried about communism. And Winston Churchill was prophesying, so to speak, that we would have to fight Russia one day. Many in our own nation were saying the same thing. A number of our generals were saying the same thing. We knew that we had joined to help an enemy against an enemy, to get the first enemy down. And we had in our control, and I said it, even as a youngster, I knew this, and history has proven me right, we had in our hands the ability to keep them from being in the position they are right now, and muffed it. Whether Russia won or lost the war was determined by our Lend-Lease, the Marshall Plan, Lend-Lease supplies out or down over Murmansk, down to Murmansk. And we should have kept those supply lines just enough to take care of both enemies. Weaken their position immediately, immensely. And then we should have weakened them enough that we could come in and take over all of Germany, the whole area, and not allow them to come in, take out all the top scientists, which they did, and boost them into this high position that they're in a military way. And now look at all those nations that are under communist boot because we've done that. All those nations, many I read you this morning, are under communist control because of this, furnishing them with the supplies and the money and the wherewithal to subjugate the rest of the globe, because we did not take the necessary steps to get things taken care of in the first place. When they first put the first brick down for the Berlin Wall, we should have kicked it out of place and said, no, there's an agreement here, and this is in violation of the agreement, and you will never build a wall. We ought to have had a tanks line right up and said, we are not going to build anything, and we should have held them to everything right down to the gnat's eyebrow, and we would never have been in this place. This is what happens when you allow rebellion to happen in the family. In the same way in the world, you allow them to go on and do hardly nothing about it but talk, and you will have pretty soon a tiger by the tail. What the United States should have done in Korea is given General MacArthur orders, you take that country, we take the country as fast and furiously as possible and do everything possible to keep the enemy from coming in again. And General MacArthur said that he had power to do that without any problem. He said the only problem he had was the United States State Department. They continually kept him from being able to win the war. And they were responsible for a divided Korea today. He already chased him all the way up to Manchuria. And they would not let him bomb the 100 bridges across the Yellow River. He would not allow him. He warned and warned the mass up. He was constantly stymied by the liberals in the State Department. What the United States should have done in Vietnam, in my judgment, they should have said, you see, this stuff was coming down from Red China. They were nothing but a paper tiger. They had no ability, they had no missiles that could hit this country. They had no ability to fight us back in that area. They had a tremendous ground force. They get lots and lots of people with rifles, which makes it very difficult to fight. But they had no power to do anything on any international scale. In my judgment, if I would have been the dictator of this country, meaning that I had power to do whatever I wanted, I would never have sent troops in. I would have said, you've got 4 days to get out of the country. And if you don't get out, we are leveling one major industry a day. And the way it's simple. You don't send out 400 planes to bomb it either. You send out one fighter plane, has no trouble getting there, with a small, what they call clean, nuclear bomb. You see, today, people have got the idea that a bomb blows up all big cities. It's not necessarily true. They have sophisticated the weapons until they have very little, what they call clean atomic bomb, a small amount of fallout. They can put them in very small packages and take care of just the area they want to take care of. And the fallout radiation would have been minimal compared with the rest of the destruction that this war has caused. And they had them, we had them, and they could have done nothing back. We wouldn't have had anybody in the country hit the supply lines up behind and hit the major, just wipe out the steel industry one day, to the whole Air Force, to wipe out the major, military installations, one right after another, and industry second, and just clean them out. And first of all, since they're working on the atom bomb and so forth, knock those places out and put them back in production in about 15 years. And then what would have happened? You would have had a 5-day war. The problem would have been over. We would have saved Vietnam from the untold suffering that those villagers went through. We would have saved all the American boys going over there and dying and losing all the patriotism in the nation. We let the whole world know that we mean business and we've got the might and we're going to take care of the world. Nobody's going to come and be aggressive and going to try to pawn communism off on anybody. And that we are going to stand for freedom and won't put up with any nonsense. In fact, if we had not let the liberals take over, the communists would have choked to death long before now and got out of business. They had no ability to sustain themselves without American funds. We have constantly helped and built the communists in the world so that the 10 kings without a nation can rule the world and to push us into world government and make it become strong and rule the world. I don't have time to explain that, but I've done it before in our State of the Union messages, and I'm sure you know what I'm talking about if you've been here very long. It would have been an easy job to win that war, in my judgment, but we will not take the necessary steps. We've got too much fuzzy thinking by these pinkos in this country. What the United States should do now, in my judgment. You see, well, the United States, I don't believe in a parity. That is the stupidest military action there is. Keeping even with them, even Stephen. That's no way to do anything. Even Stephen people can give you a rough time. We were way ahead of them. We should have made our goal to stay so far ahead of them that they'd never catch up. We should have kept everything into advanced particle beam weaponry, outer space weaponry, everything necessary, kept so far above them with super weapons that we didn't have to have loads of people going in. You know how they fought in the Civil War? You know how stupid that is? Line up in big long lines, go blam, 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 and it lines up and fall down. See, this purity fighting is a terrible, stupid war. What you need to do is to have a great advantage over them so you mow them down until they just quit and give up. They have no ability to fight. In fact, the deterrent is so strong they won't fight. You know, when you're about 9'6", weigh 400 pounds, great big and powerful, the other guy leaves you alone. He only fights for you when you're about his size. And this nation should have kept way ahead of them. We should have done everything to sink communism in the world. It should have been outlawed in the United States as treasonous. And we should have dealt with other nations on the same basis and said we won't do any business with anybody who does any business with the Soviet Union. And if we had done that, they would have gone under. Because these other nations had to have us or trade. We had them right by the strings and we let them go. We never exercised any strings. We give them money with no strings. And they turn and rend us. And what we should have done is said, you got your choice. Deal with the Soviet Union or us. Economically, they could not have afforded to deal with the Soviet Union. And nobody would have been allowed. We could have built a whole world against the Soviet Union. They would have been choked off. They wouldn't have gone any place. And communism would have died a long time ago. And the only thing the United States to do now, instead of put its money all over the globe and then lose it all afterwards anyway, you're losing all you put out there. We put lots of money into Greece and look at it. Therefore, the communist government. We put all kinds of money into France and look at it. Antagonists against the United States. It's happened all over the globe. We should have said, if we give you loads of money, you're going to get rid of communism. You're going to have no business with communism. We should have, and we're not indoctrinating. We should keep the world indoctrinated as to communism and what it's doing and all the ills. We say nothing. We just let it go. We let communism exist in this nation. We should never have allowed such things. I've had missionaries come back from Brazil saying, what they asked us, missionaries are saying, how come the United States allows communists? They almost took over Brazil and we got rid of them. How come you guys allow them? They even run for president. They can't figure out the stupidity. The only thing the United States to do is to go into advanced science and war and get way ahead of everybody else, down the communists at every rule, break off totally with them. Totally. You cannot do any business with gangsters and ever come out ahead like that. Give them no quarter, and we should defend everything they do. We should come in with superior force and knock it off. We should keep our CIA, instead of downing them, we should strengthen them. They have been a tremendously good force to keep communism out of other countries. And we should be bragging him to the stars, not ridiculing him and drawing him down. And we should allow, say, you go at it. They have been the cheapest method of keeping communism down without wars in all countries around the world. We should say, we should build our CIA up about 10 times the size and say, you go at it and you keep working and knock them down every place you can. Unlimited paycheck. And that's the place to put your money, right there. Instead of giving these hundreds of billions to communist countries. We are right now paying for our no-win wars that we've had in Korea and Vietnam. Not allowed to go in and really fight. The people have come out with Eleanor Roosevelt saying, we have to get used to no-win wars. I believe General MacArthur said there is no substitute for victory. We are paying for detente, giving Russia a favored nation status. Why should we ever have given them a favored nation status? We should have given them the stinkiest nation status. Let me back this up. Stalin had butchered 30 million Russians in the Communist Revolution. 30 million. Why don't the liberals ever wave that flag? The communists have a goal, any time they take over a country, to go in and murder all the real fundamentalists, conservatives, Christians, anybody in high power, and anybody who's intellectual and knows better and cannot be brainwashed. 1.5 million in little dinky Cambodia. And they were pushing for us to get out and not help them and let them go under. I never heard them squall one word about that. They're fussing about whales and seals and mice, you know, and tundra and sagebrush and wildernesses, sand and deserts, and don't care about the human lives being slaughtered. You're the devil. Should never have any business with Al Capone or the communists. We should never have had a United Nations. I knew that before it ever started. Not with a communist in it. We are paying. See, whenever you do business with them, they have long-range goals. And their goals have always remained steady. Subjugate the world. They have no interest in peace. They have no interest in not having war or dismantling their power. They have only interest in lying and getting treaties so that you will do your part or they continue on theirs. And they have continued to break almost every treaty they've ever made, mounting into the thousands. 700 and something like 85 alone in Korea. They broke SALT I, they broke SALT II. They're constantly breaking every treaty they've ever made. They're gassing chemical warfare in Afghanistan. It's against international law, and they keep right on going. Anybody is a total fool, or else they're troll communist, or else they are dumb like a fox, and they're working for world government and downing this country to equalize things, to bring in a world government to have control. One of the three. We are paying for sending materials to Russia. We have sent millions of computers to Russia that they've used for the military. We are cutting our own throat, making the industrialists rich as they sell to both sides. We are paying for allowing our banks to loan money to the communists. We are paying for allowing communism to exist in the United States. We are paying. You know, when people say, we will bury you, like Khrushchev said, we will bury you. To allow them to run for president of your country, if that isn't the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. See, we are under, there is demonic thinking throughout the land. This is calling light darkness and darkness light. Diabolical thinking, messed up, and it's infusing everywhere in all of our mass media to the Americans, to the children growing up, and the generation that you grow up in until people don't know how to think straight. If anybody thinks balanced, it's called radical. We are paying for the liberals having dominated our mass media. far as I'm concerned, there should be strict laws against all newspapers purposely twisting the truth. We were paying for having Russian diplomats in this country. Done lots of spying. They've hurt us bad. They've given open door to them. We are paying for weakening our FBI and our CIA and our government controls on hiring that we require people to state whether they're communist or not. No longer legal to do that in defense. Isn't that something? You can't even ask a person if he's against you or not before you hire him to build something against the communists? That isn't the dumbest thing I ever heard of. Besides the other dumbest thing I ever heard of. All the dumbest thing I ever heard of. Lumped in one big sack. You know how I'm using the grammar, though. We were paying for giving Cuba independence. We were paying for not coming to the rescue of Senator McCarthy when he exposed communism. We are paying for pulling air power off the Cuban invasion. They could have had Cuba, back. Instead of the communists. As far as I am concerned, John Kennedy's name goes down in infamy for having caused those men to die needlessly on the beach, having promised them air support, and last minute pulling the rug out from under them and letting them flounder and die and be taken captive and be tortured and whatever else, and letting the whole invasion go on. They only went on a promise that they'd have air support to pull it off at the last minute. There should be a wail go up from this country against that man for that. He should be named the most un-American man in all history. Not Senator McCarthy for putting his finger on communists. Imagine, the worst man in America is the one who puts his finger on communists. I saw a survey the other day. Well, they surveyed the ultra-liberal, and they rated all kinds of men in history, 100 being the highest and the best. Reagan rated 5, Castro rated something like 35, I can't remember the number. So you know where they're coming from. We need to pray for our nation. We need to keep letters pouring into Congress and our president all the time. I really mean that. We need to constantly let them know. See, if we get several thousand people, we could get several thousand letters always, all the time, sticking up for the president and for what he's doing for right, and demanding that this nation, that he protect this nation as he should in his position, and don't worry about the liberals. They're against him anyway. That's my constant theme. Don't worry about what they say. They're against you anyway. They'll never vote for you anyway. They'll always complain no matter what you ever do anyway. Take care of the people that vote you in. Take care of the conservatives. Take care of what you know is right. Let them go and scream to high heaven and say, don't even give them even audience. Just do what you know is right. When they're in, they do what they want. Keep preaching to them. I wish I had more amens on that. I really mean, I wish there would be an army of letter writers. You know, a man like that, you know, they can use a few thousand letters on his side once in a while. That he's always fussing at him all the time for everything he ever does. And he could use a little moral support. The man's under heavy pressure. And one day we're going to pay for business with Red China. Selling free China for Red China. So Exxon could get in there and get that great big huge oil glut that was a big farce in the first place and never materialized. And this business of saying, well, you know, the Reds are fighting, you know, the Reds have never really fought. They've never fought in Russia. They have a few people go out and do a little bit of mock skirmishes on the border a few places. Nobody got hurt. A lot of balderdash in the mass media. I mean, the words they're using to make everybody think. But I noticed that when the last leader died, the Premier of Russia went up to the funeral in Russia. Now I'll tell him something. And you got to think a little bit. When you got diehard communists in Russia and diehard communists in China, and they're both anti-capitalism and anti-Christian, it doesn't take very much intelligence to know that if we're going to come into parity, it means even, with Russia, and build them up against Russia, that those two are a lot closer together than we are. And it shouldn't take very much intelligence just to know that if we build up those two sides against us, we won't have any purity. And then they'll join and say, dupes, decadent, stupid capitalists, build up two communist groups, so one communist group will fight another communist group. You ought to know better than that. We're going to pay that penalty for that. You can't join hands with the devil and ever expect to come out. We're going to pay one day for giving away the Panama Canal. Someday our ships won't be able to go through it, and we want to get our Navy from one ocean to the other ocean, because we won't keep our Navy strong enough to have navies everywhere to do the job. We got to run them halfway across the globe for this little dinky incident and run them halfway across the globe and take 2 weeks to get back over here again. That is the dumbest thing. People don't even care enough for their nation to allow it to be strong enough to have a Navy all over, so when you have any problem, you're able to take care of it right there. Got to run it. What happens when they want to hit up, do about four things at once? Clear over in this part of the globe. They just do something here, and you run over there, and they do something here, and run you back here, and do something here, and run you back there again. Run you back and forth all over, and then do four things at once over there. Then what are you going to do? You're clear over there. Or do five things at once here. You don't have that many navies to go around. This nation's in deep peril. The admirals have tried to tell this nation they've been squalling at this government for years. So we either want more ships or less water, one of the two. So we can't do the job we're supposed to do. I am reading loads of information about this. One day we're not going to be allowed to go through that canal. We have to go clear around the horn. We're going to be in trouble. One day we'll pay for giving away money without requiring anti-communist laws. And one day we're going to pay for letting the military become weak, just like before World War II. It took us a long time to finally quit being pushed back and get the war going and so forth, because we were weak at the beginning of the war. All industrial might save us. This time we won't have 6 years to build up industrial with the weapons we got today. It won't work anymore. We're going to pay someday for giving away the Philippines. The Philippines are going to fall to communism one day, probably. For as I'm concerned, we should never have given away any position. When you give away, and we're going to pay for Britain giving away her colonies too. When you give away your colonies, you're giving away your strength. And those little countries become independent, they cannot protect themselves. One thing right now is Grenada. They're under communist, they've been under communist control. Why? They can't protect themselves. They want to go independent, they can't handle themselves. Trinidad went independent, and now they have to get $17 million a year from the United States to keep afloat. Because they can't make it independent. And they can't protect themselves against communism. And if they're independent, they're a threat to the whole rest of the Western Hemisphere, because those are all potential sub-bases and bomber bases and so forth for the Soviets. Anybody can go knock them off just like that. Little dinky coups. Didn't take much to make a coup in those countries. They don't have anything. They need the protection of a mighty nation. And if anybody touches them, get the mighty nation down the throat. Should never have given away anything from the British colonies or the American colonies. Never. In fact, they should go out and say, if you'll join us, make it become a colony, we'll put money behind you, and we'll build our own, and we'll strengthen the forces. This nation is not doing what it needs to do to keep itself strong. And someday we're going to really pay for it. Unless God does some great, enormous intervening. You know what's next? You know the next big giveaway? Have you heard it? The liberals right now, right now, before Congress, they want to give away a whole lot more. Shout it out if you know the name of what they want to give away. No, something else. Land. I didn't think you knew. No. You know, not many people know this. They're wanting to give away the Christmas Isles. The Christmas Isles are clear out in the Pacific, and they cover thousands of miles. They're a very enormous change of dinky islands. They're not worth anything by themselves, hardly. But they're valuable for bases. And the Russians want the Caribbean so they can control that area. They want the Panama Canal so we can't get through there. They want the coast of Africa so we can't, and through the Suez, we can't get through the Suez Canal. They want the coast of Africa so we can't get around the Horn. And they're already up in the Arctic to keep us from getting back across the top. And they want the Christmas Isles in the Philippines, and much as they can get out there to make bases to keep us moving that way. They're going to bottle us up all over the world. These are very important strategic military targets. And right now the liberals of this country are wanting to give away, and they're saying, well, if we don't give them away, they'll feel bad about us. You know, and some of them have no people on them, you know, Ollie, and some have no people at all on them. Some are a few thousand natives here or something else. They're not being hurt because we have something there. They're not being hurt at all. Some of them have jobs. They ride the bicycles to the factory and get wages. They're not being hurt. You give it to them, then what happens? They don't help themselves any. They have no resources. They can't go in the ground and get anything out. They can't industrialize. They can't do anything any different but lose the protection and open themselves up for communist aggression. In fact, the Soviet fleet has been doing a lot of mapping and checking and driving and riding all around the Christmas Isles. And that's the next thing that's going to be up for the giveaway. It's up right now. We're going to have some letters written about that. We don't want to give them away. It's necessary. It's a necessity. You know how these people are climbing the fence of these nuclear things and fighting, you know, all these nuclear subs and so forth? You know, it's necessary to have nuclear navy. For example, and the liberals are doing everything they can to say, oh, they cost too much, the nuclear subs cost too much. We should build a whole bunch of diesel engine submarines because then we get a lot more of them out there. Now, you see, they're talking out of two sides of the mouth at the same time. Don't spend much for war, but, oh, we could have a lot more. We could put all our money into this, and we could have a lot more out there. See, what they're wanting to do all the time, and they're giving a tremendous force in Congress and everything against the military spending the money for a nuclear navy. A diesel engine submarine, which means a non-atomic submarine, can only go a very short time on batteries. And in fact, if it has to go under full power, you know how long the batteries last? 1 hour. If they have to go on full military power underwater, I read this from a naval magazine that Jack DuBois loaned me. 1 hour until the batteries are out. And they have to come up for air all the time and expose themselves, and it takes a long time to recharge the batteries. And they have to constantly refuel. A non-nuclear navy means you can't go very far. You're out halfway across the ocean, and you're out in the ocean, and you got to wait for a whole fleet of tankers to come along, stand up alongside of you, and take a half a day refueling you while you're sitting ducks. And if the tankers don't reach you, then what happens to you? And that's where they get all these submarines out here to sink our tankers when they come out, so they won't reach them. And atomic submarines, they go close on the world. They can go for years without ever refueling. They can go all the way, they've already gone all the way around the world underwater, never came up once. They can go forever practically. Go for 10 years, I think, without refueling. And they're fighting us having a nuclear navy. And now we get a mixed navy so that the nuclear ships have to wait for the other ships and fool around and lay around out there. See, the whole thing is to weaken the United States. There is an absolute necessity for atomic weapons. If the United States did not have atomic weapons, Europe would have been completely taken over by now. No way conventional arms, all rifles and howitzers and these other things, they wouldn't deter them at all. Russia's got mighty forces in Europe. They've got tremendous tank forces all the way up and down the Europe. They would run right over Europe right now, and it would have been all taken off. The only thing that deters them is they know that if they try to overtake Europe, they're afraid they're going to get missiles. They can hit all the different cities and targets. That's the only thing, the only deterrent they've got. You know, sometimes with little kids, the only deterrent is a big stick. Rowdy people, the only time is a big stick. Like the old school teachers in the 1800s in this country, not in this country schools, some of them had to keep a black whip in the desk. They had some big lugs that wanted to fight the teacher. They had to have enough power to take over against the rebellious ones. And that's the only thing, the only deterrent right now. Well, people say, well, enough to destroy the target for every target. And they say, right now there's enough to destroy the whole world four times. Every target can be destroyed four times. I mean, you know, you keep hearing this all the time. They make the military sound like the stupidest people on the face of the earth. That's false propaganda. In the first place, many missiles will never get into trajectory if they're fired. They're 30 years old. Even some of the new ones don't get into trajectory. You can't take all those missiles, 20 and 30 years old, and fire them and have them all work perfectly. They just don't operate that way. Even your tape recorders don't operate that way. Little simple things you've gotten. These things are highly complicated. They're very complex. You know how much trouble the slow mo's have out here? These hydroplane boats out in the... Have you ever noticed they're always tinkering with them all the time? They have a terrible time keeping a boat running up and down the lake. Have you ever noticed that? Your little boats go for years. You get highly complicated stuff, and they're always breaking down. They're always in the pits. Many weapons will never get to the target. They get off course. Even a lot of our new ones are not... We don't have 100% accuracy in firing new weapons. They line up these slow targets and go on by, and then they fire at them and get 85%. You're going to have a lot of extra missiles. A lot of them are not going to make it. Some of them will never get the trajectory. Some will never get to the target. They'll get off course. Many will get destroyed before they get off course by anti-missile missiles. And you can't just count every missile. This one's going to knock that out. This knocks that out. That isn't how it operates in war. I never found out yet. You know, I don't know what the statistics on Jack DuBois may know, but they probably fire, you know, at least 100 to 1,000 bullets for every one they use. I mean, there's all so much ammo out there that never does the job. You can't count every bullet. You can't count everything you got. In fact, statistics, military statistics, and Jack probably can give you better answers than this, but it shows something like only maybe 60% of, only, you know, nobody has all the planes. You can't use all your, 60% of your planes are ready at any given moment. You never have 100% of anything. Besides that, many of these are needed for each target, for backups. You just can't have one for target, and it doesn't work that way. And many won't destroy the enemy HUD sites. They get some fantastic HUD sites, and a lot of the missiles are not, they're not big enough megatons to ever take care of those HUD sites. Only a few will take care of those. You may have to have a number to do a job. And many need replacement. They're 25 years old. So, and you can't count them. They have to be replaced by new ones coming in that are more up to date to take care of the new technology on their side. Many are vulnerable to enemy missiles. And they're very slow. You know, they're subsonic. A lot of them are very slow. They're vulnerable. Some of them are vulnerable. A lot of our sites are vulnerable. They can blow our missiles right out and right out of the site before they ever get off the ground. They get an opportunity, and they can a lot of times by being close range. Because all of them won't be IBCMs close from Russia, ICBMs. Some of them are going to be close range jobs. You know, coming from a missile base right off of New Jersey, because they come real close, boom, right next to you. Things like this. Many of them are targeted in the wrong place. And any given moment, you need to immediately fire back, and they can't be all retargeted in a short time, and many of them are all useless for that particular war. They're targeted to other positions. You can't count those. Many may be sabotaged. Come the day of the Soviet attack, their word's going to go out throughout the entire nation to all the Communist Party to a major sabotage. They've got it all worked out. They're going to be cutting the electrical power. You know what that means? I mean, a lot of places won't even be able to go. They'll be cutting electrical power, cutting lights, cutting transportation, cutting phones, taking over local police departments, sabotaging major sites, missile sites, anything they can get their hands on. A lot of them may get sabotaged right off the bat. Ships, many ships that have got missiles on them won't even be in the right place to even use them at the given moment. They'll be off clear down the South Seas someplace, and they won't be close enough to even fire their missiles. Many missiles will be in a state of redeployment, many replacement, and many upgrading. And many of our missiles are anti-missile missiles, not ICBMs, not intercontinental ballistic missiles. So you can't count every theoretical missile. These guys that can destroy every target four times, they don't know what they're talking about. They're in a total non-realistic society. You've got to allow the military to know what they're doing themselves. They know what they need. And they're right now, they're not putting their money into this when they want to. They are so far behind. They need desperately for these things. And they're not putting this when they need it for this. Overkill for this when they need it for this. They know what they need to do their job. And the liberals are just smearing them until the public thinks that we got some great big game going where they want to produce 10 times more than they need. And that's not the story. Europe, as I said, would be in communist hands right now if the USA were without atomic missiles. Now, I'm just talking about the necessity because you see you're hearing these things all the time, and many Christians are falling under this type of propaganda until they themselves are out with signs and the communists alongside of them. And the communists and the Christians are marching side by side protesting. And they don't know what they're doing. They're total dupes. Francis Schaeffer says, "The world quite properly looks back to the church in Germany during the early days of Hitler's rise and curses it, that is, curses the church, for not doing something when something could have been done. I do not always agree with the French theologian philosopher Jacques, I don't know how to pronounce these French words, but Ayol, but he certainly is correct when he writes in his book, False Presence of the Kingdom, quote, it was in 1930 that the Christians should have alerted the world. That is when the churches should have mobilized without let-up. It was in 1934, the occupation of the Ruhr, or in 1935, the war in Abyssinia, that Christians should have foretold the inevitable war against Nazism. That was when clarity of vision was essential. After 1937, it was too late. The fate of the world was already sealed. But in those years, the Christians, full of good intentions, were thinking only of peace and were loudly proclaiming pacifism. In matters of that kind, Christians' good intentions are often disastrous. Christian responsibility. I am convinced that if the Bible-believing people now go along with the concept of peace in our time under the plausible concern and fear of atomic warfare, which we all certainly feel, our children and grandchildren will curse us quite properly for not doing something at this moment to restrain the drift toward the loss of Western Europe and other places to Soviet expansionism. This is not a bare theoretical concept. This means more than the world being under tyranny, which the Christians always should resist, and also means more of the world living in the horrible conditions of our brothers and sisters in the Soviet Union. They not only lack general freedom, but they lack the freedom to teach their own children about truth and about Christ. I do not want that for my children and my grandchildren. And I think it's a national responsibility for a nation to protect against this. Well, what about Salt 1 and Salt 2 and Salt 3? It's not worth the salt to throw over your shoulder. When we, like the Bible says, when you say peace and safety, then sudden destruction cometh upon you, and you shall not escape. You cannot make agreements with thugs who have only one goal, to take over the world. You see, who's been attacking Russia? Nobody. Who's going to attack them? Nobody. If Russia wanted disarmament, it'd be very simple. I mean, if Russia wanted to be safe, it'd be simple. Everybody here knows that we're not going to attack Russia and overcome them. And they know it. The lie is, oh, they don't know that. They know that. Now, the people in the street don't know that. True, they've been told that we are warmongers, going to crush them, but that's not the point. The leaders know that. They know our history very well. And all they got to do, if all they got to do is disarm, and they would be safe. And this country would quit building up also. But that's not their goal. Their goal is the world. And they have always continued, every disarmament that's ever been, they have continued to build. I want to read this. On April 19, 1951, General Douglas MacArthur stood before a joint session of Congress to deliver his famous farewell address. Old soldiers never die, they just fade away. His speech, however, is much more than a farewell. It also includes the following thoughts on war and peace. Quote, it has been said in effect that I was a warmonger. Nothing could be further from the truth. I know war as few men now living know it. Nothing to me is more revolting. I have long advocated its complete abolition, and its very destructiveness of both friend and foe has rendered it useless as a means of settling international disputes. Indeed, on the second day of September 1945, just following the surrender of the Japanese nation on the battleship Missouri, I formally cautioned as follows. Men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Various methods through the ages have been attempted to devise an international process to prevent or settle disputes between nations. Military alliances, balance of power, League of Nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blocks out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we will not devise some greater and more equitable system, our Armageddon will be at our door. The problem basically is theological and involves the spiritual recruitance and improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advances in science, art, literature, and all material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years. It must be of spirit if we are to save the flesh. But once war is forced upon us, there is no other alternative than to apply every available means to bring it to a swift end. War's very object is victory, not prolonged indecision. In war, there is no substitute for victory. There are some who, for varying reasons, would choose appeasement. They are blind to history's clear lesson, for history teaches with unmistakable emphasis that appeasement but begets new. War. It points to no single instance where this end has justified that means, where appeasement has led to more than a sham peace. Like blackmail, it lays for the basis for new and successively greater demands until, as in blackmail, violence becomes the only other alternative. And there's been a film about General Douglas MacArthur. I've not seen it, but I know the intent of the film. The intent of the film, while John Butcher would look at the film and say, good, good film. But it's not made for them. Their minds are already made up. It's made for those, and well, he might not say good film. He'll see little things through it if he gets his eyes open. But, you know, he'll say good for General MacArthur. But they're trying to make him look like a warmonger. They're trying to do the same thing to him as they did to Senator McCarthy, trying to smear him. They lie against his moral character and his very basic in premise. The Doves have wanted to divide Korea, and they got it. They wanted no bombing above the 38th parallel. They wanted no bombing in Manchuria. They wanted no bombing of the 100 bridges. They wanted our fighters could not chase their fighters above the 38th parallel. That's in the middle of Korea there. They wanted MacArthur to abandon 165,000 Americans to die down at Pusan, and he wanted him to leave Japan and let them die down there. And he said, nothing doing. Made an invasion and pushed them back. He wanted us to abandon Vietnam, which we eventually did, and I predicted that. They wanted us to abandon Cambodia, abandon El Salvador, abandon the Cubans. Help no one in war. Fight for whales, tundra in Alaska, mice who go up in rocket tests, wilderness and seals, but don't fight for fishing rights, canal rights, freedom rights, and accuse America, but not accuse Russia, because it might hurt their feelings if you accuse them. It's unfair because they have a right to their philosophy. But conservatives in the United States do not have a right to their philosophy. They are wrong. Isn't it strange? I find it strange if we're not for some facts we know about the devil. See, God is not a pacifist. He never has been, and he never will be. The same yesterday, today, and forever. God does not condemn force. He only condemns misuse of force. Christ used force in cleansing the table. One man rebutted that and said, if you check carefully, you'll find out that the whips were to whip the animals, not the people. Doesn't make any difference. He walked over there, grabbed their money tables, which they had built, which was theirs, and had their money on it, and he threw them over with force. And he walked over and he opened their dove coats out and let all their dove go. And he went over and he whipped their animals out. That's what I call using force. He used force to chase him out. He didn't just dialogue. And he didn't give him a favored Pharisee status either. The Bible says that Christ shall come again with blood up to the paps, up to the breasts. He shall come in with blood up to his paps in the battle of Armageddon. And you know who Christ is? Adam, of the earthy, the last Adam. Man. I'm talking about God, I'm talking about man. Flesh and blood. But now he'll come not in flesh and blood, but in a glorified body, but he's the same soul. He's man, the captain of our faith. And the Bible says, we shall rule in the millennium with a rod of iron and shall break them to shivers, Revelation 2:27. Love and force are not incompatible. Love will make you use force to save. Because God loves us, he uses force. And because God loves us, he allows Israel to use force. And the reason is because God must not deal with half-covenant Israel, I'm talking about in the old days now, as though they were full covenant. See, he can't come down and work from heaven with his angels as though they were full covenant. He can't let them think that they can live in sin and then have all his blessing. So they must fight, and he must fight through them and help them. And it's the same thing with us. There is no way that the United States can just have God come to our rescue and do things. We are not in that kind of shape. God can do it, but we're not in that kind of a shape. If we'd all walk with God, if we did everything on biblical principles, my guess would be that nobody would have to fight. They would send their missiles up and all blow up in the launch pad. Every one of their machinery would rust. I mean, he has ways of downing them completely. Send a plague across them, their armies, and they'd all get sick and be bombing all over the place. And he has a way of taking care of the enemies, but he won't let his people live in sin and have God's power and blessing upon them in mighty ways. The only way this nation can ever defend itself is not to rely on God. They're not in a shape to rely on God. They have to live for God and then rely on God. You can't live for the devil and rely on God. And that's what a lot of people want to do. They want to live for the devil and rely on God, and they get into trouble. You don't understand why God didn't back them up. And God must allow the sin in the devil to show itself. And therefore, he's not going to just come and cut it off. Besides, here's something a lot of people have never brought. Multitudes of people have been saved because of war. Now, war is bad, and that is not a justification for war. But God even works to good through bad things. That they would have gone to the lake of fire if it hadn't been for war. War scares people. And some of them are laid dying. And then they remember the Baptist and Lutheran and Pentecostal and all the rest of the quarterlies and Sunday school lessons and church and so forth. And they know what's right, and they call on God in that last hour. And some of them get some thief on the cross experiences, and some of them, of course, don't. But many have been saved because of war that would never have been saved without it. So God is not the ogre people think he is. He's allowing it to chastise them and show them and cause them to see some things and some of them to make their heaven a home. I want you to notice that David used a weapon against Goliath, not a flower. And then when the weapon... See, if he would have come out and thrown a rose petal at him, God would not have sent that thing into his skull. I just read the other day, well, a medical doctor has now decided that Goliath probably had a brain tumor. And that's what caused his demise, is a brain tumor. Now, isn't it strange that a man with a brain tumor was champion, and all of a sudden, it wasn't until David's little stone came that his brain tumor took effect and knocked him flat? And he hit him right in the tumor, you know? I mean, this is, you know, they're all, any of the dumbest things, you know? Because they won't believe God, they're looking for any crazy thing imaginable. Now, only for the name of Jesus and with lawful government do we need to give our lives. Christians only need to let people take your life if it's for the name of Jesus and the one doing it is in the lawful government. You do not have to have people that are demon-possessed, bizarre, out of their minds, run in and give your life and let them kill you and mow you down. There's nothing in the Bible even remotely suggests such a thing. Only under lawful authority can they put you to death and must you submit. And only for the name of Jesus, unless you've committed a crime. And only for his name. Even if they falsely accuse you, at least if it's for the name of Jesus, you have a right, you must do that. No pervert sadist is going to rape and then kill my wife while I stand by and read my Bible and say, peace, not war. I'll tell you that. And I wouldn't have any compunction about some pervert, rapist, wild, demon-possessed man rushing up to do some violent act. I would do as little harm as possible to smear him. To put him under. I would not allow him. And if I could clunk him over the head with an iron ball, I would do it. And if he dropped, I wouldn't beat him after he was down. But if there was no way, if it was no way, if it was his gun or mine, I'd shoot him. Dead. And I wouldn't worry about it. The Bible allows you to do that. Even come in and steal your possessions. Even if your life isn't threatened, they allow you to beat a man, even if he dies. God has always allowed his people to defend themselves. This has been twisted in the scriptures. You give your life as a martyrdom for Christ, not for status. But we are never permitted to take the law into our own hands. The law allows self-defense, however. We are under civil government that allows us self-defense. Listen to me. You are not allowed to take unlawful self-defense. You are not allowed to carry weapons when they're not allowed. If the government says no more guns are allowed, you're not allowed to carry a gun. It doesn't make any difference what you think or what they're putting you in jeopardy. You are not allowed to disobey the law. You must obey the law. God has said that specifically. He'll protect you as much as he wants to. And you shouldn't worry about being protected more than he wants you to. If he wants you home, that's his business. He'll protect you if he wants to. We are not allowed to be vindictive. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. When somebody does something to us, we have a right to try to prohibit hurting, but we have no right to go back to him and cause him misery, because God is the one who brings vengeance. Bob Mumford wrote an article in the New Wine that says this: a tragic incident that recently took place in one of the wilderness areas of Montana. A young Christian desiring to spend some time with the Lord in the great American wilderness arranged a few days camping in one of Montana's more remote regions. He'd planned to hike a few miles in the backcountry, spend his time in retreat, then hike out a few days later. As he was preparing to leave, some of the local people warned that the grizzly bears were really bad up in that country during that time of year. The young believer solemnly assured each one of them that he would be all right because he knew the Lord would protect him. "This is all I need," he added, patting his Bible. They eyed each other skeptically, and the young man started out. The scheduled day for his return came, and with no sign of him, a search party was mounted to try to find him. They located his campsite, which had been ransacked and totally devastated. A search of the area turned up one of his boots. It contained several teeth marks, probably those of a grizzly bear. Only one of the traces of the young man was uncovered, a tattered piece of his jeans with a hip pocket still in place, was his pocket Bible. This is the kind of story we rarely hear about. But it's true, and though it may seem remote to many of us since we do not plan on to be confronting grizzly bears in the wild, it raises some relevant questions and implications for Christians living in our civilization. The young man obviously believed quite sincerely the Lord would protect him. What happened? Was his faith too weak? Was God unfaithful to his promises? Should he have packed a .44 caliber magnum? Now, he doesn't go on to really answer this, but I'll answer it. First of all, again, the question, why didn't God protect him since he trusted the Lord? And the reason God didn't protect him, because this isn't the millennium. He tempted God. And Jesus said, thou shalt not tempt the Lord thy God. He said, I can go up with grizzly bears and they shall not hurt me. God never said that. This is not the millennium. Grizzly bears at this side of the millennium have got big sharp claws and great big teeth. And anybody go up in grizzly country needs a .44 Magnum, or better yet, a submachine gun. You just need to carve your initials on him when he comes at you. Now, there's no way God can protect America without weapons in the present state. The saints' job, well, I told you this, I'm going to cut this down a little bit. To default to communism is folly. Because that just means they'll come in and take all the Christianity away. And it's without Bible precedent. In fact, God will judge those who default in their responsibility as watchmen over their nation and permit Christianity to go under because they have not protected them against communism. They will be judged by the Almighty God as guilty. You are blind watchmen. Your job was to protect the nation, and you did not warn nor protect, and now they have taken Christianity out, and now my sons and daughters that I have created are in the lake of fire because of you, blind watchmen, and the blood's on your head, and you're going to get the penalty in the lake of fire for it. And that's exactly what's going to happen. Many Americans in the high position that are fighting and talking this way against defense are going to find themselves judged by Almighty God. There is not only just and unjust wars, there's also just and unjust peace treaties. Any peace treaty that jeopardizes the nation is unjust. Any peace treaty with those who are not trustworthy are unjust and should never be made. American involvement in other countries with the CIA and with war, in order to down communism, is a necessary defense for this country, and is helping your brother. Just real quickly, there's something going on now down in Grenada, as most of you know. It's clear down at the bottom of the Caribbean, pretty close, right real close to South America. They built a 10,000-foot runway on it. They don't even have an air force. It's to provide, obviously, Soviet bombers to out of it. They have found large caches of ammunition that they are sure are to use to spread terrorism, which is one of the goals of Cuba and also Russia. They foster this, both of them. Hundreds of Americans were hostages in the medical school there. They had information that within about 3 days, the Cubans had already learned we were going to invade. We'd already made it known to Margaret Thatcher and the Labour Party in England, which is poo-pooing it, and saying that it would never happen. The Nazis deceived you. Then they won't do that, and so forth. They didn't think we would, but we had a president they didn't quite understand. And if 3 more days, and we would have had about 300 and something American hostages, a lot more than they had in Iran, and then listen to the whale go up. 300 and something Americans down there. Those Americans were not allowed to leave the building without getting shot. Which means that we have a right to protect our own people when thugs come in, communist thugs come in and begin to do things like that. The Canadians and Britons were not allowed to leave their country. Their countries arranged for them to leave, and their nations were not informed that they would not allow their people to leave. The Grenadian government was making promises they could not keep. The Grenadian government was not in charge. The communists were in charge, and you could not do business with the Grenadian government because you could not trust them because they were not in charge. The communists were in charge. And their leaders have admitted that. 2 days before, there was a bloody ruthless coup, which communists were overthrown by more ruthless communists. And after 3 more days, it would have been very difficult and costly to invade the island to help the American troops there, the American citizens, I meant to say. The communist thugs took over. They were not trustworthy to negotiate with, so negotiating was already out of the picture. They had already lied to nations wanting to get out. They already lied to the airlines in the country. They already threatened to shoot any American leaving the building. And American senators and many others in the country were all protesting America going down there to put things back in the right order. You see, because they're all on the wrong side. But they have not protested the communists taking over Grenada in the first place. Why aren't they fussing at that? Just about done. The United States and Europe, which were frontiers of Christianity, you know, that's where most of Christianity comes from, and most of the missionary activities from the United States and Europe, particularly the United States, is in a terrible blindness. And they're in a terrible, precarious position today. We're in a very precarious position. And in another 10 years, we will not have the strength. Even another 5, we won't. These things are changing very fast, and instead of being the head, we're tipping over this way, and we're going to be in very serious trouble, and we had the ability to stay up on top all the time. This is a terrible cancer that's been in this country. And we've allowed the communists to fight and undermine and take over around the world. And we've allowed the liberals to fight and undermine and take over, and the humanists and the activists, and sin and every kind of debauchery. We're in a terrible blindness. But although we've allowed all those things to happen, many people get very outraged if America goes to anybody's rescue, if America fights communist takeover elsewhere, if America fights communism, even they get upset. If conservatives fight humanism, they get upset. If we fight atheism or homosexuality, they get very upset. There's clearly a picture of the devil's people. Those who have light and those who have darkness. They all get very outraged if any American dies helping others. We are now in a position where people stand by and watch people get raped and even cheer. Whole group of people watching a tavern up here, a girl get raped by a whole bunch of people, and they all stood by and watched it, and some even prodded it and yelled and clapped. How does this happen? their sensibilities have been shocked by watching. I mean, have been the shock abilities and sensibilities have been negated by watching so much television and movies and so much violence. They think it's just another television program, just another game. They've watched it so much they don't even care anymore. They won't even step out to save somebody and help somebody who's crying out, "Help me," and they don't do anything. Another girl was getting raped in a certain place, and the whole crowd stood around. Well, two guys raped this girl, and a whole crowd stood and watched them, and only one 14 or 15-year-old boy had the sense to get in the bicycle and ride down and get a policeman. See, we're in a bad state in America. Bad state. And these people who won't do anything to help anybody else from being taken over by ruthless thugs, and it means a slaughter in every country the communists come in. Slaughter of lots of people. It means outright murder, which they never protest against. These people who protest against helping other people because they don't have as much protection and they need our help, what do? They preach world brotherhood. Oh, everybody's our brother out there. Then why can't we help them if they're our brother? Peace Corps. Leave the United States, go over there, and get down and teach them things and help them and help them weave baskets and learn English and do various things and help them build houses and hammer. But don't protect them if they're trying to take over the country. Strange philosophy, isn't it? They preach help them with food, but don't help them survive if the enemy comes in. Fatten them up for the kill. Then they want the United States to let unprotected nations get slaughtered by the millions by these communists. They protest the atom bomb on Japan that was done to save lives and win the war. They protest the United States and Korea and Vietnam went there to help to save them. But they never protest 30 million killed in Russia by the communists, 60 million killed in China by the communists. Do you know how many 60 million is? Everybody west of the Mississippi, you know, roughly. Terrible, terrible bloodbath. Can you visualize? As far as the eye can see, masses of people, all of them being murdered. Terrific. More than in all the Reformation days combined. In China alone. They've never protested the Russians chemically gassing Afghanistan. But they protest in the United States with having any gas or any chemicals. We need chemical warfare to keep them from using theirs, if nothing else. They may come in and gas and do certain things and put us in a position we can't do anything else. And it may be the only thing we've got when they're hiding all in the bushes to get rid of. If you need to get rid of 10,000 communist thugs that are hiding in brush and everything, nothing big to really bomb. Well, then chemical warfare is a moral way to get rid of the thugs and save the innocent. And they have not yet protested communists taking over half of the world. So I end by saying, pray, pray, pray. We need to pray for your government. The Bible says, pray for those that have an authority and for the leaders of the nation. The Bible tells us, teaches us to do that. We need to pray for our president and for other leaders and for our Congress. And we need to be sending them continual letters. And I want to give you a reminder. The address of the president and all congressmen are now posted in the bulletin board, in the hallway, out there by the lost and found. And if you want to write a letter and don't know who to write to, you can get the addresses right off of there. Now let me look at these couple pieces of paper before we close today. Oh, I see what you're saying. He thought someone might qualify, suggest you qualify your statement more that only circumstances with a Christian laying down his life is for lawful authority and for the cause of Christ. Without a further qualification, I can see what some might claim that this argument can be used to pull off another Jonestown massacre. In other words, Jimmy Jones. See, Jimmy Jones was a Marxist in the first place. And if you don't know that, there's lots of evidence to that effect. In fact, it's in Balance Magazine. And the source of the information, the bibliography is in there too. If he says, well, you should lay down your life, but you see, for Christ, but he wasn't laying it down for Christ. He wasn't there for Christ at all, besides he wasn't a Christian. And so, I'm not talking about liars, and I'm not saying about doing it when it's not for Christ because somebody claims it's for Christ. I mean, really, if it's for Christ and lawful authority, either says you either give up Christ or you're going to be killed, you can't give up Christ. You have to say, send me to heaven then.